The Gospel is from Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say, 'Who touched me?'" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know of this and told them to give her something to eat. The word of the Lord.
Before I start today, last week I preached a little different sermon. I took a little bit of a stand that was considered political. I should have been doing that earlier in my career because I got some interesting responses to it. It wasn't just the normal, "Oh, nice sermon, Pastor." I got some people who liked it, and I got some people who not so much. But that was okay. I had face-to-face conversations with people about the topic, which was wonderful. That was the point of it, to be able to talk. Somebody wrote me a letter. It was interesting to hear your views and to get some real feedback. And the other interesting thing is, even though not everyone agreed with me, which is just fine, which I expected, we were able to have a conversation that was civil, that was decent, that we really listened to each other, and at the end of it, we were still going to be friends with one another. And I think that's the way it should be. So thank you for that experience. And today, you don't have to worry, I'm not going to go controversial at all. Today, we're going to have a story sandwich, so to speak, and we get to eat that down. Mark here has a real interesting way of telling the story. He starts out with one story, he inserts another one right in the middle of it, and then he comes back with the conclusion to the first story. So it's like a story sandwich there. And I thought maybe the best way to get at what Mark was getting at here was just to walk our way through this story and point out some of the things that excited me. It starts out in a familiar setting. Jesus is preaching and teaching, and all sorts of people are around him. And a guy named Jairus, who is a leader of the synagogue, it says, a religious leader in the community, comes up to him with a request, and it's a very urgent request. He actually begs Jesus for something. Now, this right off is unusual. In the Gospels, Jesus' most fervent opponents are the religious leaders of the day. They are the ones who ultimately attack him. They're the ones who ultimately drag him to Pilate. But from the very beginning, they're leery of this guy. He's teaching a new thing. They're like, "Who's he? We're the authorities here." And so if they approached him at all, and they did sometimes, It was normally to kind of catch him up, to check him out. They were skeptical, or even to pick a fight with him. So it was unusual that this Jairus would come to Jesus with a request for him, because he knew in doing that he was breaking with all his other buddies, all the other religious leaders, and they were going to look down on him. What would make him do something like this? Well, he was experiencing every parent's nightmare. His little girl was so sick that he was afraid she was going to die. That's motivation. He was desperate. And he'd looked at this Jesus. He'd listened to his teaching. He'd seen how he'd healed people. And he just dared to believe maybe he could do this for my daughter. And so he comes to Jesus. He kneels down in front of him and begs him, "My daughter's dying. Will you come and maybe you can heal her?" And the amazing thing is, Jesus goes, "Okay, lead the way. Let's go to your little girl." The story couldn't be any better than that, right? Help is on the way. But then comes this second story, and we get interrupted. We get sidetracked a little bit. Here we meet another woman, another character, and she's a woman. We don't know her name. But she knows that she's had some kind of physical ailment. It calls it a hemorrhage. She's had it for 12 years. And this hemorrhage not only made her physically sick, which would be a drag for any of us to have a physical ailment for 12 years, and it was impossible to cure. It said, the humor in this story is just brilliant. She said, she went to all sorts of doctors and spent all her money on them and got worse. Wow, even then. Anyway, so she's desperate because not only is she physically sick with her body, but this her illness makes her ritually unclean, which means she cannot have contact with people. She's an outcast. She's unclean. She's lonely. She's heartbroken for 12 years. She cannot have normal human interaction. So she's a little bit desperate, and she, just like Jairus, has heard and seen Jesus, what he's been doing, so she thinks, "I'm going to take a chance, too. I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to act on what little bit of faith I have and see if he'll heal me." Only she cannot come up to Jesus like Jairus and openly ask him. Why? Because she's this unclean outcast. If anyone sees her by coming in front into the crowd, they'll be going, oh, don't touch me, don't touch me. And it would be an affront for this unclean woman to come to this great religious teacher. So she has to figure out a way to come sneaking in, and she just kind of hides in the crowd. You could just picture her head down. She's coming up through the crowd behind Jesus, doesn't want to even be seen, and she reaches out one finger and just touches his robe. And immediately, she knows in her body she's been healed. Immediately. What a roller coaster, huh? From this desperation, all of a sudden, the thrill of being healed, her most basic want and desire in life has been met. And as soon as she feels healed, Jesus stops her worst fear, right, and says, "Who touched me?" Again, I love the humor of this, because his disciples look at him and say the most obvious thing: "Are you crazy? Everybody's jostling you. Everybody's touching you, and you're asking who's touching me?" Well, Jesus wasn't talking about just the physical touch, those who were bumping into him because of the crowd. No, he wanted to know who was the one that had touched him in faith and been healed, who had received the power of their life back. Now, the last thing this woman wanted to do was to come out and say this publicly. But she knew that something very unusual had happened here. She knew she wasn't going to get away with this. So she, in fear and trembling, she said, went to Jesus and told the truth. Now, why did Jesus want to know this? Was it just mere curiosity? I don't think so. He could have just let her go and thought, "Somebody got healed. I don't need to know who or why or what." But no, he wanted to have a conversation with this woman. Why? Because he had more to offer her. She had needs that were greater. He had gifts and blessings that were greater than just healing her physical illness. He has four things for her. When he talks to her, he goes, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, for you've been healed. Think of that. He called her daughter. Everyone else called her outcast. Everyone else didn't even want to get close enough to her to know her name. He knew her as his daughter, as a beloved child of God. He commended her faith. Your faith has made you well. She probably thought, I don't know if I've got enough faith to do anything, but yet she dared to act on it, and he commended it. It was more than enough to heal her. And he wished her for more than just that physical healing, because he blessed her with the gift of peace be with you. Now go and live the rest of your life in peace. Not just this moment of healing, but go live your life in peace. You have been healed. How wonderful. It was worth it for Jesus to stop and tell her that. That would be a good place to end the story too, but we've got this story with Jairus here in the meantime. And just as he's called this woman daughter, news comes about Jairus' daughter. People who knew Jairus came and says, it's too late. Your daughter died. Don't trouble the teacher anymore. Wow, if you were Jairus, what emotions would be going through you? Just heartbreak, hopelessness, despair, maybe even a little anger. I mean, my daughter was dying and we stopped for this woman, and those few precious seconds could have been spent while my daughter was alive. Jairus was on a journey of faith here, and Jesus knew he was at a tipping point here. And he could either go back to unbelief and think, that's it, my daughter's gone, I'm going to grieve and be hopeless. Or he could go over and go the full journey of faith. And that's what Jesus at this moment encourages him to do. He says, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. Only have faith, trust. He doesn't want him to go into despair and unbelief. So they proceed to the house. When they get there, they see what was a common custom in the Middle East back then, I suppose even today, and which is so foreign to us. They see people mourning, and they are wailing and weeping very visibly outside of the house where this little girl has died. We Americans don't like our grief that way, do we? Grief makes us uncomfortable. We don't want to express grief. We don't want to be seen expressing grief, so we kind of bottle it up. But here, they didn't have to worry about it. The family could enter in, they could weep and show their grief because everyone else around them was already doing it. But when Jesus sees this, it strikes him as odd, and he has this strange saying. He looks at them and says, why are you making so much noise? This child is not dead, she is only sleeping. I want to stop there. What is Jesus seeing that we or those mourners were not? Plenty. Where those mourners were looking at the exterior facts, all they see is a dead body there, a dead child. That's what the appearance is. But Jesus sees beyond that. He doesn't see a dead body. He sees a sleeping little girl. He sees deeper into the inner reality, and he pulls that out and makes that the reality. It's the same of what he did with that woman, too. Everyone else saw the surface, saw her disease, saw her being unclean. They knew her as unclean. Jesus saw beyond all of that, and he saw her as a daughter who was already made well, and he reached in and pulled that out and made that manifest in the world. Wow, what power there is in that. So Jesus literally goes into the house. He casts away the people who are mourning, who are wailing, and he brings the parents and his disciples into the house where the little girl is, and he does exactly what I was talking about. He reaches out to her and pulls her into her life. And he has these interesting little words, Talitha kum. What are those words about? Those words are Aramaic. Those were the language that Jesus actually spoke. That is the language that little girl actually would have understood in her life. The New Testament was written in Greek. People did write, and educated people did write and read in Greek and speak in Greek. But that's what the New Testament is in. But they reserved these two little words from the original language from Jesus' tongue because they were so intimate. They were so personal. They had to be in the original tongue. They remembered, they witnessed themselves, Jesus reaching out to this little child and saying, Talitha cum, little girl, arise, and she did. Wow. These two stories pack a double whammy, don't they? Because they need to get through our fear. There's not one of us that isn't living in fear of something going on. The fear of losing something, fear of disease, fear of money, fear of losing a relationship, fear of losing of what people think about us, fear of what God may think about us. But Jesus looks at us, and he sees beyond that surface. He sees beyond that, and he sees into the inner us, and he sees us as a son or a daughter who is already healed in his eyes. And he wants to reach down and make that the reality of our life. And so he says to us what he said to Jairus, don't be afraid, just trust. Amen.